Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. You are listening to the internet's only college football podcast. I'm Spencer
Papa,
Hall.
Papa, why is there not another?
Papa, read numbers to me, Papa, like we did in the old country.
4.1569. Oh, here it comes. 8340.
Wow.
Whoa! Yeah, y'all.
What's that?
That, by the way, is not the total from the first item of business we'd like to cover here on the internet's only college football podcast. This here podcast has, for a significant amount of time, been a central part of the EDSBS Charity Bowl, harkening back to EDSBS.com, the motherland website for many of us here, and also the Twitter name that I work under. That extended into Banner Society and SBNation.com, but over the years, all of those sites and communities have added up to contribute, at this point, over $1 million to the charity of our choice. That'd be New American Pathways. Last week, we asked y'all to give a bunch of money. So at the top of the show here, I want to say, one, thank you. 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 You can extend that for another 90 minutes, and it still wouldn't be enough. We managed to take last year's record of $187,000 or so, and blow it slightly out of the water.
Eat shit last year. No, actually.
Yeah.
Come back last year. You were
come
so
back ridiculous. Last year. Come back 2019. No. You want something good to happen in 2020? It's this. Y'all raised over $450,000 for New American Pathways, a refugee service organization, resettlement agency here in Atlanta, Georgia. That number is so big as to not even be comprehensible to my tiny brain. However, I do know because we talked to Petey Mixon, the CEO of New American Pathways this afternoon. A little bit of what all of that record-setting total is going to devote itself to. Thanks to that money, New American Pathways is going to be able to do things they didn't dream of doing for clients in 2020 and beyond. Some of it's going to go toward rent relief, because that is a huge crisis in the United States right now for everyone, but especially for refugees who are economically vulnerable and just trying to get the start on their American dream in their first 3 to 6 months of employ. It's going to be a very hard fix for them, because many of the industries that they work in have been affected by COVID-19 and its economic impact. Thanks to that money, they'll be able to give them rent assistance, keep them in their homes. That's just one of the things that you'll be able to do with the money that the EDSBS community, the Fullcast community, and beyond managed to raise. And it'll set them up for next year, too, which is great, because next year, oh, it's going to be crazy. Either way, no matter what happens in the presidential election, either way, it will provide a serious challenge for refugee organizations and nonprofits like New American Pathways. So thank you for making an impact. Thank you for making a local impact with a global effect. Thanks, all of you. I am floored, blown away, etc.
Can we do some congrats? Can we do some congrats first?
Can we?
Congrats,
yeah, sure.
Congrats to Michigan, the money cannon once again.
Congrats, as always, to Michigan.
Which is, what did they land at, Holly?
Oh, boy, I closed that spreadsheet. It was like 60 grand.
It's got to be at least $150.
Yeah.
It's got to be
like 60 grand hour for the second year in a row. For those of you who haven't done the Charity Bowl before, this year ended despite its exponential explosion. Sorry for the alliteration. This year ended like it typically does, with Michigan and Georgia Tech out in front. And then above Michigan and Georgia Tech, there is one mega donor from each of those schools conducting like a wizard's duel that doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of us.
But so props to them for being able to do that. That sounds fun.
And the top Michigan donor, the top Georgia Tech donor won for the second year in a row. It was the Michigan fan for the first few years. Georgia Tech has beaten Michigan in single donations 2 years in a row now. But I got to tell you guys something that a lot of people were surprised by. She likes to remain anonymous, but I feel like our audience would appreciate this reveal. the top Michigan man donor is actually a Michigan woman.
Dun, dun, dun.
What?
Yeah. Congrats to Georgia Tech for showing up. Congrats to several SEC schools. I feel like showing out better than they usually do.
Can I tell you what I think happened?
Yeah, sure. What happened?
Because this is just from watching, from tracking these donations year after year and watching the messages that roll in with them. You know, Georgia Tech has always been a big school for us in the Charity Bowl because it's the hometown team for our hometown charity. You know, as someone said last week, UGA fans don't really like to live where immigrants live, with some notable exceptions, including the number of people who donated from Georgia this year. This was Georgia's first really, really, really big year in the bowl. But anecdotally, what I have watched happen is Georgia Tech fans have drawn Georgia Tech fans into this. Georgia Tech fans have drawn Georgia fans who have then drawn Alabama fans, who have drawn more Tennessee fans, who have drawn Kentucky fans. This was the first year that the SEC really rolled in en masse, but I do think we can trace that back to Georgia Tech.
A human centipede of charity.
It's like a,
God damn it, Ryan.
A competition chain.
Yeah.
Or you could call it what Ryan called it. That's fine too.
That's much worse. Yeah.
They made a big late run. Now I will say that this, there has been no comparative result so far in the Big Ten until this year. Ohio State made a valiant run this year, but no one could catch Big Blue. It was not happening.
Congrats to Slippery Rock. Finished, I think, 12th or 11th.
Yeah, this is the year the Michigan Money Cannon got bored and decided to just try and set up a second Money Cannon pointed at Slippery Rock.
Oh, nice. Nice, because Slippery Rock is like Michigan's like backup fandom. Like,
yeah,
like
if you're not aware of this, they have this tradition at Michigan games that has been going on for ages and ages of broadcasting the Slippery Rock score during games. And I watched this happen on Twitter as several Michigan fans, including our Michigan super donor, were like, okay, y'all, we got to figure out some way to keep this exciting because we're this far ahead. Let's see how far up in the standings we can push Slippery Rock.
Congratulations to Nightham University, the University of Nightham, whichever you prefer. Finished ahead of Harvard. last but not least, congratulations to Holly for surviving what I imagine must have been just spreadsheet hell.
I called in the literal cavalry about Wednesday night last week in tears. And I brought in one of my best friends who is a double-degreed Virginian and who's career path track has gone, she didn't listen to this podcast, so I can tell you, her career path has gone Bain, Hillary, McKinsey, and so I frankly felt like she owed the universe a,
when you said literal
back.
Cavalry, I was hoping that you knew a horse who was awesome at Excel.
I'm very good.
I called in my favorite Virginia Cavalier, who is the most evil corporate genius I know, because when you really gotta fuck a pivot table, you can't do it with the good guys.
There you go.
But anyway, this would not have been done without her. An extremely expensive basket of baked goods is on my way, or is on the way to her house. Yes, thank you, darling. I will not name you on the air.
The kindest gift you can get on the Fullcast.
Yeah, and you know what? This is to speak well of my enemies, as one does.
Oh boy.
Yeah. No. No. No.
That'd be great.
You know who came through hard?
Notre Dame.
And it, no, hey, not just that.
A
we
lot
have
of schools who never had before, including Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah, Notre Dame. Y'all showed up huge. Like, showed up huge. And admittedly, you're all going to have to go home in 2 weeks. Hey!
No, Tennessee had never finished. The first few years of the Charity Bowl, Tennessee was like me and a couple of the guys from Rocky Top Talk. And this was the first year. Tennessee finished 9th, which is by far the best finish they've ever had. Virginia Tech beat Virginia, we should note. That's always a battle. Washington and Lee cracked the top 10. And Louisiana Tech also cracked the top 25, thanks mostly to
Skip
our lunatic friend of the program, Choco Taco. Hello, we love you.
Mm-hmm.
That was
the
insane.
Aggies did well, right? Is this normal for them?
Oh, Texas prevailed this year.
Oh, I must...
Why did you mention them? Why?
Not that they're rivals, but Texas beat Texas A&M by like $6,000, which is unprecedented. That was a huge upset from a little upstart like Texas. And Pitt was 17th, which I know you all know. Northwestern, the private schools never come through big. Northwestern was 16th this year.
Learning that Texas beat Texas A&M makes me want to invest in renewable energy. Like, I feel like now is the time. Solar is here to stay.
I do appreciate
it's over.
Can I shout out a few of our SB Nation colleagues and former colleagues on the way? Because one other big thing we had this year, this, I don't know if the perception was just that, you know, we're a bunch of idiots and who knows what this money is going to, or if people just don't like supporting refugees. But in previous years, we have not had a lot of peers in the media show up to donate for this thing. Like, our friends have not promoted it. Our friends at other outlets, with the notable exception of the guys at AL.com who come through big every year. And this year we had Golic Jr. running his own thing for Notre Dame. We had the Georgia Tech radio crew, like, sending out signed merch to everybody who donated. We had from SB Nation, we had the guys at Good Bull Hunting, the guys at the Champagne Room, Streaking the Lawn got in there. Bucky's Fifth Quarter got in there. Especially Jay Arnold from Texas A&M made yeoman's efforts. Podcat was in there big for us. And if I missed you, I'm sorry, but my mentions and my spreadsheets have been a nightmare. But we had so much support from our pals in the non-football
media. Yeah. Amanda Moll at The Atlantic. Yeah,
got Georgia involved. Georgia started. Amanda Moll might be the only reason Georgia fans woke up at all. But, like, football and not that any of us are football media right now, but we had more support from our industry peers this year, which we'd ever have, and more donors, like, by hundreds of individual donors than we've ever had before.
Yeah, just an insane effort on everyone's part. So
Arkansas at 24. Yeah, sorry, I just saw that, and I wanted to remark on it again.
I mean, if you want to see a ranked Arkansas, I know where you can do it.
This is your last chance for a while.
Colorado State and Colorado, both in the top 25. Minnesota and Wisconsin had a big duel going there. But we didn't even think we were going to meet last year's total, let alone multiply it. And this was the best possible surprise.
We are doing this episode, which is a golf disasters episode.
Oh, right.
Because it was a stretch goal. And that stretch goal was at, like, what, 225, 250?
And this was 225. This was a stretch goal on, like, Thursday, right? Yeah. And then there were still 3 days to go.
We also just quit doing stretch goals after that day because we did not know when this was going to stop. We just kind of sat there and watched.
I also feel like with golf, you don't want to stretch too much. You know, that's like exercise.
This is true. Stretching is for sports.
You want the natural tension of the body.
You ever seen a cheetah stretch?
Uncoil.
Neither a cheetah nor a golfer. Two equal caliber athletes.
Neither a cheetah nor a golfer bee.
I like when people say, hey, man, you never see a cheetah stretch. I'm like, yeah, they live 7 years.
And they can run. They can run like 9 seconds. And then they go to sleep.
John Daly can't do distance, but quick bursts. Quick bursts.
When you see him, don't you think, man, that looks like an athlete with speed.
When John Daly is 40 yards away from you, it's already too late.
Sorry. That's because you're somewhere John Daly would be, and that's not good.
And you have lung cancer is what that says.
Jesus, put colorful pants.
How do I have cirrhosis of the lungs?
You looked at him the wrong way. That's how. Delightful. So that was awesome. That was very cool. That was great, fun, and inspiring. It was very fun to watch. It was like day one, almost an ominous feeling of like, oh, this is the big one, huh?
We've awoken something.
I was going to ask Jason, this was not the only good thing to happen in the last week. It was really good, but it's not the only good thing.
There are several good things. First, let's break. Because we've gotten a lot done here today. Just because we mentioned Michigan's adoption of Slippery Rock. Home Field Apparel. Your number one source for incredibly comfortable collegiate apparel.
Just fucking nailed it.
Possibly nailed it. At some point soon might be introducing merch that has something to do with a certain college adopted by the University of Michigan fans. Possibly.
Just might.
You can have 20% off your purchase of any junior college, not a junior college, Slippery Rock is now a JUCO. In any college that you or your general fan base have adopted, 20% off with the offer code FULLCAST at homefieldapparel.com. Maybe you want to adopt Wofford or App State. Good luck trying. Good luck trying to wrangle them.
Well, I was going to say, are you in an apartment? Because you should adopt the Wofford because they have the Terriers. Now, I don't know if the Mountaineers mascot is one allowed out of his house due to being on house arrest.
Yosef? Oh, yeah, Yosef. Yeah? Yosef is going to eat you out of house and home.
I think if you try to purchase the county in which he resides, you're going to have to root him out of there. But it's going to be worth it.
Adoption's just a form of arrest, if you think about it.
I love that Yosef always looks like he's about 3 seconds away from going, ATF's here! Got a skedaddle! Meanwhile, the Wofford Terror is just like, ah, my eyes! So far on the side of my head!
Let's see. You could adopt Big Red from WKU at homefieldapparel.com. You'd have that thing in your house. You know, like some municipalities have regulations of what kind of animals you can and can't have. There is no law against a Big Red. You can't regulate that thing.
You can do what many of us have done and adopt Indiana as one of your teams. How did we get here? How did we get to the point where I had to watch Indiana play a bowl?
Got here, go Vols.
I know. I had to watch Indiana lose to Tennessee in a bowl game, and it made me sad.
Hey, it's not like I thought that was going to happen either. Don't yell at me.
God damn it.
You could adopt the Akron Zips. Who would not want to adopt a kangaroo?
That will hurt your credit, just so you know.
Is kangaroos notoriously enumerate?
You know those t-shirts that you can get in Myrtle Beach that have like a bikini body or a tuxedo on them?
Mm-hmm.
I want one of those Akron shirts, but it's just the shape of Terry Bowden.
We can probably get that made at home
homefieldapparel.com. 20%
right.
off your Terry Bowden body shirt with the offer code FULLCAST.
This is where
to
they're going to draw
the line.
I would
like him to be clothed. Thank you.
Okay, I see. So he's just wearing like an ill-fitting hoodie?
I really just want, you know, he had that period for a while where he was real ready and he was coaching at a school where in the right lights that blue can show up purple, and he just had a real Violet Beauregard vibe going for a while, and I dug that.
What if it is a shirt of Terry Bowden's body wearing a Terry Bowden body shirt?
Wow. Oh, wow.
The Nexus.
Anytime anyone looks at it, their mind scrambles.
This is how Homefield Apparel cracks, like, the Tokyo fashion scene.
Homefieldapparel.com, the most fashionable brand on earth, and looking at it is the same as drugs.
Damn. That's legally true now, because you said it.
Under Indiana
law.
Yeah.
Yep. Spencer, bring us our last piece of FULLCAST business.
Last piece, this week we launched a newsletter that, you know, you might want to subscribe to. That would be...
Why?
We launched it because we have 4 people, the Moon Crew. That would be Jason Kirk, Alex Kirshner, Richard Johnson, and myself.
Oh, those are good reasons.
Yeah, excellent reasons. Wouldn't you want to read stuff that we write, both about college football and beyond? Wouldn't you want to see in your inbox, you have a new email from Moon Crew?
The irony of Spencer asking if we want an email.
Yes. That and also, who wouldn't want an email?
From Spencer, right. It's the only email you'll ever get from Spencer, listener. I can guarantee that.
But it's probably very costly, right?
No. No, for the low, low price of $0. That's why we call it Moon Crew, because there's 2 zeros to spell moon.
Sure, we can retrofit that reason.
Sure. That's how you spell moon.
Have you guys got merch with Frank Beamer and the 00 thumbs up going into overtime yet?
We are going to hire Frank Beamer just so we can do this. Mooncrew.substack.com. Free to subscribe if you would like to donate. There is a Ko-Fi, Ko-Fi. You'll figure it out. It's linked all over that thing. It's very easy to find. We plan to publish at least 2 newsletters a week. If Alex really catches the blogging spirit, it might be 7. You never know. But we're going to shoot for at least 2. We're going to play it casual, keep it cool. We're under the assumption there will be no college football this season, so we're really going to try and pace ourselves. But We like blogging, so we wanted to make sure we have a place to blog. Now we got a place to blog.
That's true. You know what, Jason? I'm just gonna make a little editorial decision here on the air. We're gonna have a little meeting. Can I write something about Holy Moly? Can I just write something about how awesome Holy Moly is?
Yeah. What is that?
Doesn't matter. You said yes, so it's
Jason,
done.
This is a television program you may actually appreciate.
Okay.
I know
that sounds holy. So.
Yeah, that's true. It's in the Bible. That's why they call it Holy Moly.
So this TV show is in the Bible?
Yes, it's in the Bible.
Is Joe Tessitore Catholic?
I mean, yeah. Ezekiel sees some shit that it reads like a TV show.
Well, listen, if you read the book of Ezekiel, you will see something that I can twist into a definite prophecy foretelling the arrival of Holy Moly. Holy Moly is kind of like a cross between MXC or any Japanese game show and Extreme Putt-Putt. So okay. imagine a series of very theatrical, huge putt-putt holes shot through with obstacles and insane things you have to do.
People are the balls.
Mooncrew.substack.com.
That's not right at all.
People are the balls.
People are the balls. We will clarify that in a newsletter entry that I write.
Coming within the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, people are the balls. Anyway, it's a wonderful show. It's got, if you are a college football fan listening to this, and why would you do that? Joe Tessitore is the host. I love Joe T because he reached the peak of broadcasting by holding the Friday night ESPN college football gig, turning it into a nonstop fountain of unpredictable chaos every single week. Then got the Monday night football gig. I guess it's a prestige gig, whatever, right? Monday night, biggest gig in football. And after that ended, he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hang out with Rob Riggle, and I'm going to laugh at people falling off of obstacles. And honestly, it's my new career path. It's my dream.
He looks so happy, and I'm so thrilled for him after he was cruelly taken from us and stuck on Monday nights. I am so glad to see him thriving.
He's happy. He's happy because people are the balls.
People are the balls.
Now, is Rob Riggle doing stunt work, or is he like pointing and laughing at these folks?
He is definitely pointing and laughing. My favorite running gag on the show involving Rob Riggle is whenever any of the contestants fall off of the obstacles and into the water or onto the pads, he goes, "Oh God, oh God. Well, she's dead. R.I.P. R.I.P. Oh God, she was so young."
If this is like 2015 or something and you're like, you should watch this show, Rob Riggle's on it, I'm like, oh, that's not cool. But right now I'm like, that sounds like just the jolt of wholesome energy I need in my life. Give me the Rob Riggle.
Let me tell you.
Rob Riggle content right now.
Let me tell you, the Riggle Tessitore connection, it's real TV magic. I'm not even lying. Not even being a dick. It's real TV magic.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. There we go. Something else you can get by subscribing to Moon Crew. .substack.com.
Also, speaking of this sport sort of sounded like golf. Golf gone wrong.
It sounded right? like golf gone wrong, which I will tell you, for 98% of the people who ever pick up a golf club, there is no difference between golf gone wrong and golf. None. It's the same thing.
The stretch goal for this episode that we mentioned, the charity goal, Spencer agreed to host a golf podcast.
Yes.
The simplest thing to do, the simplest way to fit that within the brand of the podcast Spencer currently hosts is to do a golf disasters episode. So we sent out a call, and folks, golf is hard. That's the takeaway for me.
We've learned two things tonight. People are balls and golf is hard. That's what we've learned.
Well, I think I have explained to each of you in some format my theory that golf is the cruelest sport.
I haven't heard this, I don't think.
So most sports have an end limit of some sort that has nothing to do with how good you are. Like, a tennis match is played until a certain number of games and sets have been won.
Most sports have the fourth dimension of time, too.
Right. Football, mm-hmm. basketball, these are just time-based sports. Baseball's, like, kind of in the middle there, but even there, like, it has definitive, like, okay, we're going to get through 27 outs, and then in theory, the game will be over. Golf, and my point is, if you're bad at those sports, it doesn't really change how long you have to do them. In some cases, it actually sort of speeds it up. If you suck at tennis, man, tennis is over real quick. You can be done with that shit in 27 minutes, no problem. If you are bad at golf, it just gets longer. You just have to do more of it. Like, that's the insane part to me, because, yeah, you have to get through 18 holes, but golf doesn't care, like, whether you're taking 5 strokes, 10 strokes, 12 strokes, whatever. Golf will just say, no, eat more of this, because you're bad at this, therefore you must eat more of it.
How Scottish.
It's rough.
Golf
it's
is the sitcom
rough.
Dad that tells you you have to smoke the whole carton of cigarettes.
Yes.
The whole carton. Like, the idea behind golf is that if one is excellent at it, there will be less of it.
That's the incentive to get good at golf, so that you don't have to play as much golf.
You could, in theory, never get off a golf course.
That's right, yeah.
Correct.
Under the rules of the game, you could die there.
Oh, sure. Okay. So
it is the David Hume sport, because
you said magic words, death in golf.
And
yeah.
I did. Yeah, I did. Because David Hume said, you know what? You only assume the sun's coming up. And golfer, you only assume you're gonna go to the next hole. That's not guaranteed. Not at all.
Before we dive into I think mostly reader submissions, can I share with you the first record of golf in America?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
It's December 1650, and we are in Fort Orange, New Netherland, which is basically where Albany is now. So we're in Albany in December. And some Dutchmen go to a tavern after a game of golf. And I don't exactly know, the records are unclear as how many Dutchmen there are, but what is known is this. There was a bet on the golf, and it involved the winner getting brandy from the losers. Now, there is a kerfuffle at the tavern, because the winner accuses the tavern owner's wife, basically, of shorting him drinks, of, like, she has written down in chalk how many drinks he is owed, and she erases them as she hands the drinks out, and he says, hey, you've erased errantly drinks that I'm supposed to get. This leads to a fight between one of the golfers and the tavern owner, and the other golfers join in. The tavern owner and one of the golfers, but not the one who started the fight, end up killing each other over the accusations. But here's the good news. They managed to apologize to one another before they died.
Golf, the gentleman's game.
9 years later, the government of Fort Orange bans playing golf in the streets because, and these are their words, it causes great damage to the windows of the houses, it exposes people to the danger of being wounded, and it is contrary to the freedom of the public streets. So if you were to go back to 1657 Albany, you would see a bunch of Dutch assholes playing golf in the street and possibly talking about, hey, remember that golf match that got so heated, a guy killed a tavern owner and vice versa, but don't worry, they both said they were sorry.
I'm just picturing Fast and Furious 1 when they're like, oh shit, the cops are coming. We're going to golf for pink slips until the cops show up.
This is the first record of golf in the continental United States is a double murder and people just playing golf in the middle of the street and hitting windows and passersby.
Golf is way more interesting than I thought.
This is at least the second time golf was banned. My people bear the moral burden of having invented it, and it is quite possible that some of my direct ancestors influenced the early golf universe. Fife in Scotland, St. Andrews, that is where half of my family comes from, and the name Kirk suggests somewhere near a church. So yeah, it's quite possible that I bear the sin of golf, but James II, the king, around the time banned golf because it was taking away from archery practice. This was also the same king who, when he was 10 years old, was part of the event that is inspired the Red Wedding in Game of Thrones. So, very...
On which side?
Very, he survived it. So,
so you know what? Good for him. Whatever role he had.
Yeah, we won't say too much about. I'm sure he'd made a great choice.
I'm proud of Jimmy Two Times. Jimmy Two Times made it.
What a hell of an internship.
He was 10 at the time.
Yeah, that means he definitely did that shit. A 10-year-old in his era. It's like a 40-year-old now.
Yeah, he's like, listen, I'm going to die at age 13. Just let me have this.
He's like, get me a knife. Let me stab somebody I hate. Please.
And put that putter down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's archery time.
You bastard. If you want to kill me, you do it like a man with a bow.
Yeah, big old nerd.
I do think there was a missed opportunity to just train Scotsmen to go to war with golf, just hit golf balls at their enemies.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we tried that. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, when the Vikings invaded, like, that was the entire plan.
Okay.
You know. Do any of us have personal golf stories by chance? Spencer, you've been to the Waste Management Open, right?
Yeah. If you haven't been, by the way, closest comparison to the ugliest world's largest cocktail parties I've been to is the Waste Management Open. It's just a glorious, colorful, fragrant, open toilet of festivity and debauchery. The entire thing. If you've ever wanted to go to
the accuracy of the name.
Yeah. No, it is. No, like, that's the deal. You're like, yep, this is the Waste Management Open. If you've ever wanted to follow around the worst examples of toxic masculinity who are all trailing tiny Ricky Fowler in his Oklahoma State hat and yelling, Big Dick Rick, after every drive. Go ahead. And it's, you're like, they're not going to say that again. And Ricky Fowler, like, does a gentle, supple chip shot out of the rough, and it trails ever so gently and precisely to within 3 inches of the hole, putting him in position to save par on a hole where he might have hit double bogey. And then out of the silence, someone in a Barstool shirt goes, Big Dick Rick! That's the Waste Management.
And then Ryan Lochte gets his wings.
And then, yeah. Ryan Lochte.
No, we can't let Ryan Lochte in the skies.
No. You've just made him more powerful. Do you know how stupid he is up there? There's not oxygen. He's even dumber.
No, he has gills. That might actually... Oh, no, that'll make it worse.
Yeah.
No. It's amazing that he's been this good in the water without gills or really breathing regularly for most of his life.
Oh my god! I just realized he's like a reverse the abyss.
Yeah, his brain's a toadstool. You just put it in a dark anaerobic space overnight, and it's fine. It actually gets stronger.
I only brought this up because I know how much you love Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
I do. It's true.
She's and wonderful. Ed Harris.
No,
I wasn't gonna. Ryan, please don't bring this up again.
Don't. It's a special thing I have. So yeah, I've been to the Waste Management Open, but I was raised on golf and have a very torn, intense relationship with it in that I don't like it. I don't like playing it. It's fine to watch now, like especially as a methadone sport in the age of COVID. Golf's fine. I'll watch golf any day. Like, sure. You know, it's also like a really hard sport to broadcast. And now, like, my broadcast nerd eye kind of takes over when I watch this, and I'm like, oh man, you guys are doing really amazing work. Because do you know how you cover a golf tournament? If you've ever been to one as a media member, you sit in the media center and watch the TV and occasionally walk out and trail somebody, because otherwise you have no idea what's going on, because like 36, 40 different people are all wandering the course doing different things all at once. It's impossible. If you wonder why all golf literature before like 1970, it's like, so there are only three golfers. That's because those are the only people you could follow around. That's it. Everybody else was like, and I guess that guy's okay. Yeah, that's what I heard. Heard he was good. So golf's fine, but I grew up playing golf. And I will tell you, as a non-athlete with zero talent athletically, nothing's more embarrassing than growing up playing golf. Nothing. It's horrible. I really, you know, I won't play basketball, right, Ryan? I won't.
You've made it very clear that even if we left you alone with no cameras and nobody watching with a basketball and a hoop for hours, you would never touch the basketball.
No, because somebody might be watching. You'd say, oh, nobody's watching. And I'd be like, bullshit.
And then God descends and he's like, oh.
No. Oh, that's a trash jumper, son.
God's watching and he's like, God, did I make you with short legs on purpose? Or did you just piss me off?
I made you in my own image and God, I hate myself. Yeah,
you in my own image and God, my torso is just freakishly long.
Yeah. God, you have no touch whatsoever. Golf is worse.
God is shaped like a fire hydrant.
Golf, for somebody who has no innate motor coordination or skill, is embarrassing. Doesn't describe what golf is, because, Ryan, you said, oh, yeah, you know, like golf, there's really, you might never make it off. Some of us have experienced this firsthand. Some of us, when we attempted to tee off, as I did, in golf camp, please imagine the hell.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, it was like that.
How old are you
at golf camp? Let me talk to golf camp Spencer.
Golf camp Spencer is a naive and yet already broken 11 years old.
Oh no. That's
So they just how many kids are here at golf camp?
There are about 15, and you play in groups of, like, you know, you play in foursomes, so you play in like four kids alone, right? And,
oh, God, there is so much bullying.
Oh, yeah. And I line up for my first drive, and the tour pro.
Wait, Spencer, where was this? What state?
This was in Franklin, Tennessee.
Oh, no.
This is like right now, this is the Batman origin story.
So this is golf camp with expectations parents.
Yes. Including the tail end of my father's. I'd done a really good job of killing any
managing expectations.
Strangling. So
this right now.
Destroying every day with my very person and being.
This moment that we're watching is when your dad is like, all right, this is it. It's either this or nothing. Like,
on to the next son, right? It's kind of like at that point.
How'd that work out?
At that point in my relationship with my family, I am at that point the useless animal at the zoo who was acquired with another animal and who is then put, like, I don't know, it's a llama. What does it do? It's just llamas. All the kids go to see the panda. We don't know what to do with this thing. It's just weird.
Llamas are cool.
Yeah. I'm the hornbill. The hornbill who's like, hey, I'm a bird that eats meat. And I was like, ew, what's that?
No, that's cool. That's a dinosaur.
Yeah, that's you see, it's way cooler sounding in theory until you go, hey, kids, that's a bird that eats meat. And they're like, let's go look at something else. So I go to golf camp and I tee off. And my first tee shot, when I line up, and I've never been able to hit woods. The one thing I can do is putt. Like, if you want to know the one thing that stuck, is going to mini golf when I was like 19 and in college, and just destroying the course and going, how did I do that? It was
putting is the roulette of golf.
Yeah, you just have to have a good attitude, right?
Oh, that makes a lot more sense now.
It does make a lot more sense. You have to, and you have to like have absolutely no fear of failure. Which, having failed at the rest of golf, I had no fear of putting. Because, screw you. This is trash. This sucks. I can do this part. This isn't hard. God, you people.
You're never going to whiff.
No, you're never going to whiff on a putt. Right? Also, you're never going to have, like, the expectations. Well, all right, you'll probably never whiff on a putt.
It'll look like a practice. It'll look like a practice stroke.
Sure.
Right.
It's more likely that you can play it off.
If you do it enough times in a row.
Just very diligent.
I will save the story of how bad I am at golf for my turn.
Right. So I line up, and the first thing I do is I top the ball off, and it doesn't even get past the ladies' tees. By topping it off, I mean you hit it with the bottom half centimeter of the club and then send it going tuck, 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 tuck in front of these three kids who immediately are like, and any 11-year-old knows this, there's a moment around your fellow kids when you fail at something. And everyone looks at you and goes, you're the one who dies on the island first. Right? And that's
golf,
what they're all
golf
doing.
Golf island.
You die on golf island, piggy.
Spencer.
Right?
That sounds like you just did an onside kick.
I did, which would be cunning in another sport. That's really, I really should
but
have thought about it
about
that way.
The thing about golf is when you do an onside kick, you do indeed get to retain possession of the ball.
That's a terrific point, Jason.
It's a and possession I, game.
And it doesn't even have to go 10 yards.
Now, I did not walk the 15 feet forward to take my second shot.
Why not?
Because I was first, and I broke the seal and was immediately like, oh, there's the kid we're going to kill and eat. And yet, the second kid I was with lined up, took his shot, and he was a bigger kid, like a taller kid, one of those early bloomers who was already kind of like probably 15 or 16, right? Probably needed to shave. It was huge. I was like, oh, this kid's going to crush it. He'll probably hit it through the air. Like, it's a miracle when a kid hits it through the air, much less with any accuracy. And he hit it through the air all right. He went whack and hit the hardest shank I have ever seen in my life. Flew about 30 feet out and about 20 feet up, hit an oak tree. And it made, like, the cartoon, like, noise, like, bonk.
Yeah.
Bounce back and hit one of the other kids in the balls. And here's nice. And though nothing to me is funnier than sports played badly. And of the sports being played badly in the universe, the only thing funnier than baseball played badly is golf played terribly. I've never been able to stop laughing at it. I've never, ever not been able to crack up. It's a problem when you see a pro do this, because I've seen pros do this and I've been on the course when pros take a terrible shot. And if it's bad enough, I bust out laughing like a dick. Like some guy who has made $3 million to be 30th in every tournament hits a shank and I lose it like I am watching my dad, right? Every time. And they get like the golfer will look at you like, what the fuck's up, man? You're a complete loser. And I'm like, but I didn't do that.
Yeah, but you are here to entertain me. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is what you get paid the money for. You get paid $3 billion and you get free golf pants for life. And I get to laugh at you. And we're going to have to be okay with that contract.
Whenever somebody says, what do you mean sports bring people together? Just tell them that story.
Yeah, the best part about the kid shanking a ball so hard that it flew immediately back and hit another kid in the balls is that the third kid was immediately the one owned. Not me who topped off like seconds earlier and hit a ball 15 feet. Not this idiot who shanked a ball 45 degrees in the wrong direction and destroyed this other kid's testicles and injured him. No, the kid who got hit in the balls, who was the best golfer of the three of us, by the way, that was the guy.
Good. Take him out.
Yeah, that's strong. That was strong.
Strategically, that's a strong move.
Yeah.
Spencer, do you ever think he did this as a favor to you?
You know what? If he did, then I really owe him. I really did. Because I just disappeared for the rest of the day.
Where
you know, the other kids are like
one set of tracks in the golf course, that's where the nurse had to
where
come
you saw but one bruise on that other kid's nutsack.
Mm-hmm. By the way, at golf camp, I never remember finishing with the foursome. Like, I think I was so bad, they just left. So I was just, like, kicking my ball along, eventually rolled up to the clubhouse.
When are you bailing? Is it, like, the fourth hole? Or?
I started walking after, like, the fourth or fifth hole. You know, you go, all right, that's a pretty good effort.
I think the real lesson here is that you shouldn't pay for your kids to do things they don't want to do.
No, don't. It's not worth it. They'll hate it. All the memories will be bad. And it'll just be blank space in life. You can do that by just keeping them home to do nothing or clean. That's my golf. That's my golf story.
I was not raised as a golfer. We were very much a football, basketball household. Also, we couldn't afford golf. But in high school, I happened upon rich friends, including several who lived like around a golf course. And we would mainly use it for really stupid shit like midnight paintball or like, oh, all our girlfriends are coming to egg this house. Well, we're going to egg them, you know, just like stupid like prank stuff. But one day we went out to like, okay, we're going to play golf for real. And I remember we got kicked out because we refused to wear polo shirts. Our
rebel,
moral principles
rebel.
Would not be compromised for golf. And that was it. That was the end of my golf career.
Why does golf make you wear a polo? Like, why?
It's for safety, I think. You know, it's like wearing a helmet in any other sport. Like, you don't want to get skin cancer
the sun
on your,
off
neck.
Your neck.
Yeah. And you don't want to, you know, if someone launches a ball and it bounces off an oak, you don't want to catch it in the, you know, in the jugular.
Sure.
It and also allows balls to be stored rolled down in the collar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're doing some sort of a trick play, you know, you want the
like
you
how
know,
tennis players keep them in their pockets.
Sure, and then you can Dilophosaurus style frill it open and shoot.
Yeah, for intimidation.
Everywhere.
If you're having duel, or you know, if you're like a baseball pitcher, you know, if you're reaching back there for the ball with a little bit of you know a little magic on it, and like this is the one, then pow, it's got the extra English flying through the air.
I sort of
like navigating the trees like it's
like it's a homing beacon.
Yeah, it's got real good neck sweat on it.
Yeah,
I think it's actually a Scottish thing to let you know that you're not a an Orangeman. They're like the Dutch can't wear these. It's true.
Right. And
oh yeah, because they got the big fucking frilly. Like they look like walking sunflowers. Right?
Exactly.
Like,
they'd be like, "Hey,
but a
laddie,
but a humble Scot,
but a humble Scot with your tiny collar."
You can see the sun behind me. That's what it is. It's like just to demonstrate that you are alone. You know,
right.
You're not obscuring like five other golf warriors.
You're not one of those roundheads, are you? No. Because a roundhead can't fit his head through that collar. See,
Spencer, this might be your best accent.
Thank you. I'm gonna never do it again. I hit 100%. I hit 100% on this. I'm just going back off it.
All this really tells me is that he's just watched a lot of DuckTales. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's it. No, that's if you were really, man.
Listen, the new DuckTales slaps.
The new DuckTales is great.
The new DuckTales is I will say this. It's unreasonably good. I was like, I was not prepared to undergo this much emotion in an afternoon and also be entertained by a children's cartoon.
Like they did some smart shit by doing things like retaining the theme song and whatnot, but also the writing is just terrific. It's very much a product of like this century and this time.
They in case I didn't know, I wasn't already in trouble. They put lyrics to the moon theme and make it a part of the lore of Huey and Dewey and Louie's mother coming back from the moon, where she's been lost and imprisoned for 10 years while they became little ducklings. It's heartbreaking, man. It's heartbreaking. Holly, do you have a golf story?
Not. I have a golf adjacent story. I grew up in a golf forward household, of which I was not really a participant. My father is an avid golfer and belongs to the local country club. My hometown is very small, so you've got to put a heavy hillbilly spin on this when you think of country club. As such, there was an annual tournament that was always staged to coincide with the year's first Tennessee football game, at which the prize handed out for the lowest net one-day score was a taxidermied armadillo in somewhat poor state of repair.
What does that mean? Like, I know if I were to buy a book and it was listed as somewhat poor, that would mean, like, the binding's a little frayed and it doesn't have a cover. What does that mean for a taxidermied armadillo?
Yeah, same it doesn't thing. Have a cover.
It's a little rickety. It's got I didn't know armadillos had whiskers, but the whiskers are falling out in patches as though the armadillo has developed mange. Also, at some point over the years, the armadillo, whoever went home with the armadillo was required to keep it in their home for the subsequent year and then bring it back for the next winter. And at some point, one of its previous owners had given it a pedicure. And by the time it came to my father, it had also acquired like a little infant UT jersey on it. I didn't realize until he brought it home as a child, because here's the other thing. They're not native to Tennessee. They're there now. They were not there when I was a child. They have since migrated up from Florida. But I had seen them by the side of the road in Florida every once in a while, but I didn't know that's what an armadillo was. They're terrifying. They're absolutely terrifying. And so my mother brought it home and was like, absolutely not. And so my father in some sort of compromise, banished it to the downstairs bathroom and would bring it out for holidays. Like, he would dress it up in a little Santa hat. This was my dad's American Girl doll for
sure.
a year.
Yeah.
He would bring it out for holidays and dress it in themed outfits. And that is really the only vaguely horrifying golf story I have. I am so
This
bad.
Is Constance. She's a World War I armadillo.
My dad tried with me a couple times. He tried with both of us. I am so bad at golf that it goes beyond funny, and it gets to where other people around me are just embarrassed for me. And bowling, same thing. So my dad immediately gave up and put me on the swim team, and that was a much better fit for me. So as an adult, I do enjoy a little Topgolf, because the point is not to golf. The point is to eat potato skins and drink lots and lots and lots of well vodka under an awning. And if I have to pretend to play golf along with it, hey, Spencer, you've been to Topgolf with me. I can almost hit the ball in the direction that everybody else's are going.
Potatoes yep. and vodka under an awning is most people have to like root for Old Miss to get
that. Better.
You just have to do Topgolf.
I was dragged to Topgolf kicking and screaming by one of our co-hosts and found that I enjoyed the experience very much, because it's like Applebee's, but you don't have to stay at your table.
True. And I have always wanted a free-range Applebee's.
And also they have Wi-Fi. Listen, we work from home, y'all. Our entertainments are few.
The question this has inspired me to ask is, what do you think would be the most difficult animal to do taxidermy upon?
To taxidermy?
A sea creature?
To taxidermize.
A jellyfish.
Because I'll just tell you this. I have begun stumbling into taxidermy internet to see what they think.
Why? Oh, I thought you meant like outside of the show you have begun to.
Jason's just looking to fill the time.
I'm unemployed, so... looking to take up some hobbies. No,
I feel
further,
like
I've
armadillo
spent...
has to be fairly on the easy side, because it's got a shell, right? You
yes.
don't have to deal with...
What I'm gathering is that tough animals are that's like your rookie level. Right. So like if you're getting a botched armadillo, someone is really terrible at taxidermy.
Poor pelt.
Poor
oh, this
pelt.
Was
ab- yeah. if
I
you
do
have
not
like
believe
a...
this was an amateur job. I do believe.
Okay. Yeah, I would assume it would be something with a complex coat or. Like something that where textures change,
or something like a greyhound, like something with really delicate skin.
Well, I mean, something with the skin itself could be delicate, but I would assume something that had, you know, fixtures, like something with horns has to be hard, because you know you got to make the edges match and they have to match naturally, because a horn is a living thing. It's not necessarily this like totally dead thing. It anchors into like live skin. It's got to be hard. I will tell you this. If you want to see what bad taxidermy looks like, go look at photos of the old Beijing Natural History Museum. I went there, and oh my God, it's screamingly funny. They had two things in that museum. Corpses in formaldehyde that were very poorly preserved and when in leaky tubs of formaldehyde. And they had terrifying bad taxidermy, like a bobcat that looked like we had surprised it in its... in its emergence from the afterlife as sure. an undead bobcat. Like,
I caught this bobcat
out.
Sleeping with my wife.
Yeah, exactly. The bobcat's like, ah, Carol! I know I'm not what I used to be.
I'm here to report back from the taxidermy forums. Rabbits are very high on the list. They're very delicate. Also,
squishy.
They're tiny, so yeah. any mistake mm-hmm. is going to take up like 10% of the animal right there.
Okay, I could.
Lots
I could see
and
that,
lots
yeah.
of rabbit complaints. Lots of squirrel complaints.
I was going to say, yeah.
Foals.
Also, doves.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, feathers. So. Feathers have to be difficult. Period. Right.
Yeah, I would say so. So you're going to want to start with a rhinoceros for your beginner yep. taxidermy.
Good. Yep. Good.
Komodo dragon, maybe.
Just the kind of thing they love for you to trophy hunt and kill to practice on.
If you find one, don't go kill it. If you yeah. find one,
Florida
if,
State
if someone
fans,
has hit it
we
with
never
a car,
talk about y'all anymore.
got a deal on a rhino the other day down in Naples. We'll have to let you in on it.
All right, is it time to read some tweets?
Can we do one bit of promo first? Because I would feel bad if we did our whole golf disasters episode and we didn't do a little light promotion for the shotgun start, which our friend Brendan Porath co-host.
Oh, absolutely. An actual golf podcast.
An actual golf podcast.
Delightful golf podcast.
It's right. Like, you've just heard the extent of my experience with golf. I love this show.
It is the entirety of my golf media consumption. Yeah, I there is no golf media I pay any attention to other than this podcast.
No. You can find it where podcasts are sold. And Brendan is great on it, and so is his co-host Sandy Johnson. And they have seemingly acquired our technical problems. So if you really want to, like, if you're like, I'm worried that another podcast might, like, not have a host who forgot to record or things just disconnect in the middle, the shotgun start is for you. It will be comforting.
I would like to plug one more piece of golf media while we're here for no other reason than I like them. The Golfer's Journal, which is a print-only magazine. I have written in it before about this very armadillo and the events that followed it being brought into our home. I believe, Spencer, don't you have an upcoming story with them as well?
I do, about my favorite imaginary golfer.
My piece is in issue number 7, which I think you can still order. It came out last February, but it is a golf magazine that I enjoy reading because most of the people in it are not mostly writing about golf. Sorry, that sounded insulting.
I got where you're going.
No,
this is
in the way that
we
definitely
talk about
speaking
football.
To the full cast reader there.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. I feel like those of you who are actual golf enthusiasts on this show, you don't need to be a golf enthusiast for Shotgun Start. You do for Golfer's Journal, but I recommend it anyway.
I would like to, by the way, we did ask everybody to submit their golf disasters. We have both picked and allocated a couple of these as needed to share. I think we've managed to stay on brand with a lot of these in terms of, the kind of story we're talking about. For instance, I would like to start with a bang. Can I start with a bang, y'all? Can I start with a big, like, Bryson DeChambeau 500-yard drive?
No way of stopping you.
Golf is quiet. God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless...
Everything starts with a big bang, including golf.
That's right. An expanding universe, like Bryson DeChambeau's traps. The big golfer.
Which, that will eventually collapse in on itself.
That will eventually collapse in on itself.
It ends with heat death, and then you have the big shrink, don't you?
Yeah. He's gonna Bryson DeChambeau, by the way, is gonna end up being your friend who's into every fad, right? Like, yeah, this year I'm in the CrossFit. Yeah, no, powerlifting, dude. Now it's yoga. Yeah,
also,
an ultra runner now.
Bryson, like the universe, intends to live for billions of years.
I'm gonna live till I'm 180. I'm taking like 28 liver pills a day. It's Bryson liver.
The left side of my body's doing keto.
Yeah.
The right side.
Once again, Florida State fans, you say we never talk about you or your lives.
It's all about muscle confusion.
It's all about confusing me.
It's about organ confusion.
This is from this is from golf adjacent Tulsa legend himself, Bunky Perkins, friend of the program, avid golfer himself. Says his playing partner in a charity scramble got loaded on the course, proceeded to ramp the golf cart off the 18th green into the parking lot, crashing into a car. He got a DUI. Tulsa! What'd you do? I got a DUI in a golf cart in Tulsa. What the fuck you want to talk about?
Was it Oregon State where back in the Fulmer Cup days there was a DUI in a golf cart that occurred in the same offseason as both a drunken boating arrest and an arrest for stealing a sheep that was being used in a study on homosexuality in sheep?
Or Oregon State. Oregon State. Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Hey, man, he got a golf cart DUI for charity.
I mean, really? Like, the best part is
it's
I know
about
that, like,
the kids.
The sheriff showed up and he's like, I get to do this. Yes. Yes. Of all of the stupid DUIs I'm going to write, this one's going to be the sweetest because turns out the 19th hole is jail.
Wow.
Whoa. Is that why there's one on every golf course? I've never gotten that far.
Mm-hmm. It's just like the Eagles Stadium.
Yeah, they got a jail in there.
If you get in trouble in the 17th hole, they bury you under it.
Yeah, do you want to know
the new Cowboys Stadium? Remember, we saw it.
By the way, at the Waste Management Open, yeah, you could totally get arrested. You know, one great way to get arrested is to jump into the water hazard on a dare for $2,000.
I feel like whatever happens to you next will be punishment enough.
Well, someone did it, and they were pulled out by security. And I will tell you, being pulled out of a water hazard in front of thousands of hooting people for $2,000 for a bail and ultimately legal costs that are probably going to run you about $3,000, put you about $1,000 under par on the day in the bad way.
Okay. I was going to ask. That's a golf joke.
That's my first one. Because I figured you really couldn't get more of a start to the kind of golfer that we were likely to encounter here than getting a DUI at a charity golf tournament.
Can I do a lightning round? I found a really strong theme here. In order from Robbie Calland, Bo Spooky, D-Val KK, Bo Stiegel, and Improbus 00, and Joe Van Hoos. What a crew. First junior tournament I ever played in, I was 13 and still quite bad. There was a par 3 over water, and I hit 6 consecutive shots in the water, refusing to take a drop elsewhere, and then walked off the course, just filling the lake with content.
Hero.
Next. I broke 2 van windows in 1 JV golf tournament. Same hole, 2 different vans. It's called, is that accuracy or is that precision? I can't remember which.
Okay,
is
listen,
which.
No, at Topgolf, this would be a very useful skill.
Yeah, if you, yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's not accuracy, but it is precision.
That's what it is. Yeah. I lost 11 balls on 9 holes once, 6 in 1 pond.
all these little tin cups out there who are like, no, driver. Don't you gonna lay up? No, driver. Going over that water.
I will conquer nature.
Do you decline? No. Do you decline? No. Dormammu, I'm here to bargain. obviously, the theme of my group is bad decisions that continue.
Compounded interest. Bad decisions.
Compound interest, the most powerful force in the universe. I'm directly responsible for my grandfather's country club having a rule against anyone without license to drive the golf cart. Anyone without a license. In one day, I was 8. I wrecked 3 different carts before the 10th hole.
Okay, I'm just going to say that's on the adults. That's not
after,
on you.
Yeah, after the second wreck, why are you still driving? This is on the grown-ups.
Because they figured, like, well, you can't wreck like, who could wreck 3?
I think this is a situation where, like, if you're playing Grand Theft Auto and the car's already on fire, you know to get out of it because it's about to explode, whereas Bo Stiegel is like, no, this thing's got one more hole in it.
How drunk were the adults, though, that they're like, yeah, let the kid drive.
This is the best option.
Of these things, but there is no telling what I'm going to do to it.
From Improbus, my uncle hit the same guy twice in one round. Now that is accuracy versus precision. And finally, from Joe Van Hoos, my neighbor invited me to a harmless $2 skins game. Ended up playing for $1,028 on the last hole. Lost. I was making good. There's more. I was making $14 an hour at the time.
That means that, like, he was like, this is it, man. This is my fuck you money. I'm going to get this grand.
And I'm going to retire. Place. I'm going to get my own place.
I'm never going to work again.
I mean, I'm 15. I'm going to retire. Oh, God. Now I'm in debt till I'm 99.
I had one shot, man. It's a skins game. Real money? Yeah, it was a grand.
What is the intermediate step between $2 skins and betting $1,000 and $1,028?
Yeah, I feel like we hit the fast forward button a little.
I don't know. I blacked out, man. It was wild out there. It was crazy. It was wild golf out there.
I really don't know how that. I mean, what, $2 a person?
This is why they call it the sport of kings, because this is how wars get started.
Sure.
I mean,
so
that's
I was
like,
out there all. I was all fucked up on golf.
That somebody threw some multipliers in here, right? Because
this is how you end up at the big table. Because like hole nine, somebody was like, let's make things interesting. And the guy's like, oh God, this is my chance.
He's out there playing Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
We have talked before about the signifier of hearing. It turns out in the story as a signifier that what happened is your own fault and you are lighting. I would put ended up in there with that same linguistic family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it ended up.
I can tell you that.
This sounds like someone who was like double or nothing. Again.
2 to the 10th power is 1,024. So that's close.
Yeah, with a little interest,
you're doing mental math in your head and you've been drinking out of plastic cups all afternoon, that's maybe a 128.
That's it. Somebody just threw a zero in there at one point. I think that's a grand.
Yep.
It was Charles Barkley based on that voice.
Hey guys, you want to play some golf? Make it a little interesting.
Charles Barkley is terrific, I will say.
Yeah, can you give us Scottish Charles Barkley?
This should have been a golf podcast the whole time. Shit.
I can't even do it. It's horrible.
Scottish Charles Barkley.
Oh, hey. Great Ned, I've never seen anything so.
Yeah, no, it's I can't even get through it.
Ernie.
He sounds like C-3PO breaking apart.
I know. Kenny, that's just terrible.
I can't breathe. Oh.
Devin Booker needs to get out of Phoenix. He's the shite hole.
Oh my God. Please. Spencer, read another one.
I will read another one. God, Scottish Charles Barkley would be even fatter, wouldn't it?
I'm crying.
If you introduce Charles Barkley to Scotch eggs, it's over.
No, they're just called me eggs.
Yeah, just me.
Have you had these? They're delicious.
This is really a story about somebody's grandfather. This comes from Springstead 25. Around the age of 8 or 9, I was hitting golf balls with a buddy in my grandparents' backyard, unsupervised. Unsupervised is an important word that clues you in as to how the rest of these scenarios are going to go. When he knocked me out with cold with a backswing, I wake up with my 70-ish-year-old grandfather shirtless, driving me to the emergency room to get my head glued back together. This is just a prelude, though. Number two, a few years earlier...
The same person? Okay.
Yep, a few years earlier, while I had a backcountry driving range, oh, what a magnificent collection of words that is, with the same grandfather, I was bit by one of the range owner's Jack Russell Terriers.
Wow, that's a sentence that you could have stopped a little bit earlier, and it would have been amazing.
Only memory is the dog jumping up, and that same grandfather, again shirtless, carrying me up the hill to the ER. Number three. Feels important to mention that, yes, we live in Florida, but the first story was in Georgia.
Yeah.
Go Gators and go Bulls.
You've made like an HMO Sisyphus out of your grandfather for golf.
Just like his whole childhood, I want to imagine is his shirtless grandfather going, oh, God damn it, let's get to the ER again. But not putting a shirt on. Not like, oh, I got to go to the hospital. Better put a shirt on. Nope.
I got bit by a dog at a backcountry driving range as a child.
Nothing speaks to my blood
more
than that.
What would the Jason Aldean version of this song sound like?
It sounds bad because Jason Aldean is crap.
No, I was asking Jason for his jeans, truck, shirts, cutie rendition.
Okay, I just wanted to say that.
I mostly just focused on the idea of backcountry Jack Russell. Like a roving band of dingoes.
Like, do you know that driving range is a bunch of dudes who look like ill-tempered Jack Russell Terriers and an actual ill-tempered Jack Russell Terrier just going, all going like, I'm out of Bud Light. This sucks. I need to get some cigarettes. I'm going to bite this kid. Maybe he's got Bud Light.
Hey, I can't close up until these two leave. Fuck it. I'm going to bite him.
That was what it was. There was a grandfather going, ah, Pinky got him. He is an ill-tempered dog. I should have warned him.
Get that bastard on out of here. Go bite him.
Yeah. Show who's dominant.
God damn it. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah, Holly, you're up next.
All I've tried to stick to a theme for most of mine, and that theme is birds. I was teeing off on a par three, says friend of the program Blanks, and there was a pond to the right. I hit the ball real hard, dead right, an inch off the ground. It was stopped before hitting the pond by a fuzzy duckling, which exploded into beak and feet.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Saved the ball, though.
Clutch. Hero bird.
You Randy this... Johnson to duckling.
Oh, there's more.
This is like reverse Easter. Like, oh, look, no. we found a ball.
To complete this round, as a repayment for last week when I was unavailable for prep, I am going to assign Ryan lines in the spreadsheet that he has not yet read, and I am going to have him read them live. Ryan, if you could begin with line 20 from friend of the program, Jargonaut.
I was playing with my dad and friend, teeing off on an uphill par 3, and had to go over a road with a bridge. Sculled the fuck out of a 7-iron into a railing on the bridge. Ball ricocheted back into my dad's chest, who was standing 15 feet behind me and to the right.
You think you're safe back there, don't you?
It's always nice when it's always nice when golf can become an evil word problem. That's what I love.
Yeah, my dad is traveling at 2 miles an hour. This golf cart leaves my club traveling at 55 miles an hour.
Anytime you can hit somebody, who's standing behind you, that's the ideal. Like, Spencer is right that the kid getting hit in the nuts. Like, I'm sure he was standing in a quote-unquote safe place. But the problem is, like, golf safety presumes good play. Like, here is where to stand to avoid a golf ball hit by somebody capable. A golf ball hit by somebody who's not capable is a random number generator. And you being even, like, on the course at that point, you have assumed the risk.
You know what? I'm going to interrupt, and I'm going to... call part of that statement completely inaccurate as long as Phil Mickelson is alive. Because Phil Mickelson will attempt shots so difficult that sometimes, in fact, they do come into contact with spectators at high speed.
Sure.
Often where they do not expect a ball to be, or where many think it was not theoretically possible. And then he gives them $100 and signs the ball.
Didn't he hit one onto the roof of a club? What's that story that you were telling me?
He's hit everything.
Okay,
Phil Mickelson
God,
has hit.
Jesus.
He hit the top of the hospitality tent with the U.S. Open on the line.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Winged Foot in 2006. He was going to win the U.S. Open, and instead of doing that, he was like, y'all watch me bang this bomb. And he got out the driver when he should have put a 4-wood. He hit it off the hospitality tent. Then hit a tree, then tried to hit it over that same 3-story tall tree and lost the tournament because I gotta hit bombs.
See, this is where I feel like my dad should have kept me trying to learn golf, because I can be this tenacious and pig-headed and bad at golf, and I'd be bad at financial crime. So there's nothing between me and Phil Mickelson.
Yeah. See, Phil Mickelson's open world golf where you'll never know where the ball
unmanageable egotism, weirdly shaped body. I got it all.
It's a very Rex Grossman approach.
Listen, he hit the hotel at St. Andrews.
Yeah, sure.
Which is beautiful. Like, there's nothing, like, the best part is he's lining up. You're like, do it, Phil. Hit the hotel. Do it. Hit the hotel. You show that hotel who's boss.
Spencer, don't you have a story on the spreadsheet from one of our readers that has a similar predicament?
I do. I have several. I have my theme tends to go around injury and around other things that you think shouldn't be hit. I've got a couple like that. The first is one is from Robert Nolan, which was about 160 yards out, just behind the 150 yard marker pole. Mishit the ball directly into the 150 pole, shattering it into 1,000 pieces.
You're free, golf course.
Now we don't know where we are.
Loosed from the tyranny of measurement.
The curse has been broken.
At least you know exactly how far it was. Well, I hit it at 150 yards.
Well, now we're all lost. We'll never find our way home.
Yeah. Another one comes from Roto Tutor, which I'll do a little bit of a speed around here. My dad always carried a one iron in his bag and was the only man I ever saw able to hit it. When he died, I used to carry it in tribute. Thought I'd be cute and punch out of the woods with it one day. The ball ricocheted off a tree and knocked my buddy unconscious.
have you ever seen a one iron?
No. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
God. I don't think I have.
It's an evil looking man. It looks like a child drew a golf club.
Yeah. Like big, like if you're like, what is it? It's a big piece of metal.
It's a wood block on the end of it.
Yeah. Skinny pole, big wood block. Yeah, that's. And I imagine that's exactly like now you're seeing the children's drawing of this whole incident, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's even
so
better.
So my dad always carried Mjolnir in his bag.
No one could pick it up. And then when I tried to be a smartass with it, his ghost came down and almost killed my friend.
A one iron is kind of like just having like a mallet hammer on the end of a stick and just be like, I hit with this. It's fun.
If I could, occasionally there are people who do the challenge where you only play with three clubs.
Sure.
I would totally take a one iron just for cussedness. Just like,
God.
Because I'm not going to be good anyway. It might as well be weird.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the motto.
Yeah. And then, but this is all a build up to this from Staircase Wit. Weren't maintenance for a county course in high school. Oh, man. County courses. I have a feeling the best possible stories.
They're rugged, okay? They're rugged, yeah. and they're for the people.
Yeah, well, what's more rugged than working a county course? Okay. How about working the tree crew at a county course?
No.
Because had a buddy who just returned to work after missing 2 days being T-boned by a car that ran a red light. Boss tells us the oak trees need the shoots removed, which means we'd be climbing 30 to 50-foot trees with pruners. We had just gotten into our first trees, which happened to line the fifth fairway. About 20 feet off the ground, we hear a weak four as a ball screams through the 12-inch gap between me and my tree and hits my ailing coworker directly in the ribs, causing him to fall out.
This is the funniest part about golf to me is that it's this sport that requires so much physical maintenance of the course, like from the design to making sure like everything is cut the right way to the slope of the green, blah, 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 the traps. And it's just in 99% of cases, it's just so a bunch of assholes can go fuck it up. It's just like, imagine if all tennis, like most people who play tennis go play on some shitty hard court somewhere. But imagine if all tennis was played on Wimbledon, like these carefully manicured tennis courts, and then you saw like your shitbird uncle go out there a little bit hungover and just like slam his racket into the ground.
Yeah. Now I want to see this actually, right?
Yeah.
It's an immense waste of effort for people who don't deserve the nice thing that they have been given.
Well,
and that's what makes an American.
Every golf course is in effect a golden toilet because, yeah, it's a gold toilet. You know what's going in it? Yeah.
Golf
that's
and it flushes all of them.
Golf balls.
That's right.
So all this talk of injury has inspired me. I've been playing, my video game of choice at the moment is Sniper Elite, where you shoot Nazis and you watch the bullet, like, you get this x-ray cam where it's like, oh, that's the part of his skull it went in, and there goes his brain spewing out of his skull. You get the full x-ray cam. We're gonna make a golf video game where if you hit a pedestrian, a fan, what do they call them at the Masters?
They call them patrons.
You hit a Masters patron, you get the 3D cam, and it says liver shot, right? And you get
Phil,
like
Phil Mickelson's like going, okay, I got 10 grand on this. It's going straight to his skull.
You got 100 XP. Kidney shot.
C4, yeah. I'm going to break it.
Yeah. You got mines, you got grenades. Yeah. Golf is awesome. I have a Phil Mickelson tale. This comes to us from Full Cash Reader Jordan. When the Barclays was at Bethpage in 2012, Phil Mickelson showed up at my friend's house because he couldn't find where he was supposed to stay. So he just knocked on however many doors until he found it.
Wow.
I mean, there's a lot you could do with this. To me, this suggests is this Third Amendment case. Like,
sure.
Like if Phil Mickelson is trying to quarter himself in my residence without my consent. No, sir.
Not. No.
No.
The funniest part
Phil's lost.
The funniest part about Phil Mickelson is that all of these things that he does, like, Spencer, if you go out and do some dumb shit in life or on the golf course,
yeah.
Fair. You are doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson has a caddy. And so every
Phil
dumb
Mickelson
thing
has to have like an entire support team, right?
Well, exactly. Not, yeah, but
just
at least
that, but also like 1,000 patrons following him.
Exactly.
Yeah, going, Phil!
But at least on the golf course, every time Phil Mickelson does something stupid, he has had a conversation with another trusted human who almost certainly said, "Don't do this, Phil." And he said, "Fuck you, I'm doing it."
Because there's 100 dudes in like polos and khaki shorts and visors saying, "Knock on that door, Phil. That's the right one.
Accept your army."
That's actually like I have followed Phil at a tournament, and that is 100%. It's a bunch of guys in quarter zips who all work in finance or want to talk about finance.
Sure.
And they're all lined up behind him like, "Phil, you need to do that insider trading shit again.
The Wolf of Wall Street."
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's really that's really what it's like.
Street.
Yeah. And like
golf balls.
Wow. Yeah.
Stupid.
It's the best.
It's pronounced wolf.
Also, that's how actually like that's how the 2006 Wingfoot thing happened. He lined up, and you can hear his caddy going, "Well, no, you got a safe shot here. I'll, like I'll just
and
take
he
a
says,
four.
Fuck you.
Just take a four. Just take a four wood.
Caddy's like I got a family, man.
Like he literally had hit it into a garbage can the hole before.
My kid
like
braces, Phil. We talked about this.
Yeah, no, like he's like, just take the four wood, man. And he lines up, and you can hear him on the video go, "Driver." Like that's and you see everyone around him, like half the crowd is like, "Fuck yeah, Phil, let's hit bombs," and the other half is like the other half sitting there just going like, "Oh no, no,
put
no,
it in
no.
the dumpster, Phil."
Yeah, do it. Put it in my skull. I love it. Sign the hole.
Phil Mickelson, give me the kidney shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, are Phil Mickelson trailers Penn State Twitter?
Yeah, they are. They
are
really
they all?
Are.
Are they all Trace McSorley era Penn State Twitter?
Phil Mickelson killed my child.
Yeah, Phil. Every golf fan is when that WrestleMania where the main event was ladies.
Yeah, I have
stapled a scorecard to my forehead.
Listen, yeah. Becky Lynch can and should shove a truncheon down my throat and then just twist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's fine.
And we love it. We love it.
Becky Lynch clubbed me with the one iron.
If you can carry it, indeed.
I have one that I would like to pop in with. By the way, Jason, is that the sniper game where you get to shoot Hitler in the balls?
What?
I haven't gotten to that. That might be
spoiler.
An earlier one. That does not happen in Sniper Alert 4, though. They should probably do that in all of them.
One of the sniper games, I know you can shoot Hitler in the balls.
That is festive.
Yeah, in slow motion. He's sure. Like,
yeah, it does give you exploding Nazi gonad cam. Like, if
what
they step on one of your
life.
Landmines, it's like you see them flailing and like, wow, their nuts just blew up. Now they can't make any more Nazis.
Yeah. So
math checks out.
This was from, I like this one from Kyle Stevens because there's a cameo from someone who I assume is either his mother or a lady relative of some sort. Maybe a childhood intimate friend caught my brother flush
that's a
in the
weird thing to say.
Well, you'll see because it's not totally clear. But the witness
also,
who
it's
is
not even your turn, but go off.
It's okay. It's either his mother or a childhood intimate friend. What the fuck?
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Attorney, you want
just
me to clarify
go,
on this? I wasn't going to go ahead and assume anything.
No, just go.
No,
it's
no,
fine.
No. If the court will permit me, I'll slander this woman.
I just
say,
don't wow. like. I don't like that you said childhood intimate friend.
Anyway, as somebody who definitely
it's
understands
somebody
human
who
relationships,
needs to diddle him in a treehouse.
I think what I'm hearing is like imaginary like ghost friend.
Imaginary ghost friend Linda has a Twitter account, and she shows up.
You mean
when
like
summoned.
Elena Ferrante intimate friend? Or
yes, they sit around eating artichoke hearts and drinking espresso and talking about the sad passage of time.
All right, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Again, Florida State fans, you say we never talk about you.
Kyle Stevens caught my brother flush in the face with my driver. We were young, and I wasn't supposed to be playing with the clubs. He walked behind me, never saw him. I want to say around 50 stitches around his eye. Missed the eye completely, though. So much blood, as Linda Sue 1 can confirm. In a response, Linda Sue 1 shows up and says, "Above the eye, below the eye, and so much blood on my beige carpet!" Exclamation point.
What childhood intimate friend complained about their beige carpet?
Although you cried harder, loudly crying, laughing face emoji, 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 emoji.
Good.
All right, I'm going to take a turn. I'm going to return us to our bird theme in just a moment, but I need one more Mikkelsen-style antic story, so I'm going to turn to user Paul. A co-worker was chosen to drive our bosses at our firm's golf trip in Scottsdale. We returned to the Waste Management Open because he is terrible at golf. He got the cart stuck on a rock about 5 feet above everything else in the middle of a dry gully. We never figured out how he got it there or got it down. He was sober. He had the largest auto insurance policy limits I've ever seen on an individual.
Hey, you know what? Knowing
you know
yourself
what? That
is good.
No, that is situational awareness, and That's I right. applaud it.
That's right. That's self-actualization through Geico.
Let's pick another one for Ryan.
Okay.
Ryan, let's take you to line 23 and friend of the program, Matt Scalise's story.
Okay. All right. Got it right here. My first job was working as a cart boy at a public golf course, so I have two stories. Number one, the boss came by one day and said the landscaping guy didn't show up and he needed one of us to run the mower. My coworker and I flipped for it, and I won. A few minutes later, I watched as he started the self-propelled lawnmower. Oh, God.
Look, on all the he side, said was on, run the mower.
On the side of a hill, facing downhill toward a lake. I saw it coming, and there was nothing I could do. He cranked it, and the mower immediately took off into the water.
Look, you said run the mower.
Number two, on my last day of work before the end of summer, the girls who ran the snack cart called me in a panic on the walkie-talkie and said they needed my help. I sped over to where they were, where they revealed they had crashed the snack cart into a tree and badly bent the metal roof frame. "There's a blowtorch in the cart barn," I told them. "Do you know how to use it?" asked one of the girls. "Yes," I lied. I attempted for about 20 minutes before informing them that the torch must not be the kind that gets hot enough to melt metal.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that kind.
Yeah.
I clocked out.
It's one of those, like, lady golf courses, or golf courses. It's one of those blowtorches for ladies.
It's a kid's blowtorch.
It's the kind you use to make the crust on, like, a nice flan.
Sure. It's a creme brulee torch.
It's just a sparkler.
I clocked out and did not return. I have no idea what became of the poor snack cart. Yeah, there's a horrifying amount of like dangerous equipment at a golf course that is entrusted to like grubby teens.
Mm-hmm. Blowtorches, like, and actual like flamethrowers, the kind that trim brush. Yeah.
Yeah, right. heavy landscaping equipment. Gas-powered golf carts, you've got those. And that's all with, like, the natural disaster that can come just from the golf itself. To Florida, you add in that, like, perpetual lightning and tornadoes and shit. Yeah, golf is just...
And alligators.
Yeah. Golf is basically, like, beckoning you to die in an embarrassing fashion.
Let's finish up. Right. Lightning bird round.
All right. I was 15 years old playing with friends, says user Jonathan Scott. I hit a drive to about 100, and between me and the hole was a creek and about 30 geese.
Just walk away.
That's not your
geese
life, man.
Geese are an enemy of humanity and cannot be trusted. I took a sand wedge, sculled it about 3 feet off the ground, and heard a thwack. My ball hit a goose directly in the neck, breaking it and killing it instantly.
That's a lot of neck.
But the thing about breaking a goose neck is that if it breaks about halfway up, it just slumps over onto itself like an upside down U. Go Canes. All right. Next bird story. Hang on. This isn't a bird story, but we have one more wildlife tale. Was having a horrible round on a public course in D.C., says reader Andy Pratt. I finally hit a decent drive on the 12th hole. As I got about 50 yards to the ball, a fox comes out of the bushes, stops at my ball to look me square in the eyes, then picks it up and runs off. The disrespect.
That feels
the
like
that's a dead relative. That's 100% a dead relative.
This is like
I came back, bitch.
Yeah, this is like some fucking like Danish tale that if this happens, you'll have 1 year of bad luck or something.
Imagine He's how much bad you. Golf that it, dude. It's a public course in D.C. Imagine how many bad golfers come through in the form of like congressional aides and whatnot. But this guy, the fox couldn't take him.
Nope.
You have been visited by golf fox.
Press F to pay respects to golf fox.
Fuck you, I'm golf fox. That's my ball now.
God damn, you know, if he's golf fox, then that makes our friend Slippy in this tale, I'm afraid.
Golf fox appears in some haunted Danish wizened man from 1840 comes out and is like, he's chosen you.
Repeated slander of the Danish people on this episode.
I'm now picturing some entire fucking midsummer festival where like the golf fox has chosen you. Now you have to like be burned in a barn dressed up as the golf fox.
We will entomb you in giant golf fox.
It is very great honor.
From DJ Ringus, hit a duck on the 8th. We were on the 9th.
Boom, count it.